so whether there's a police report or not, he is violating the terms of his bail. And if he, you know, I'm not gonna allow him to be on bail if that's the case.
So you revoke him?
Yeah, so we can revoke that bail. And the other thing I don't understand is why we haven't been a little more involved in this process, being we are the process of the current, I mean, what you're doing and these studies and all these fancy things you're talking about, essentially I've been doing it personally for 17 years. I get the call, I make the decision, I decide if the risk assessment.
Sure.
You know, and so I believe that everybody in this room would rather work with you than against you, hands down. I got a feeling you're not leaving anytime soon, so we ought to try to get along.
Sure.
But there are some concerns, because even with the way, I mean, this automated thing is so weird, just saying. And I'm old, so I don't get some of that stuff. But even with the program that Salt Lake is implementing now, it is so on again, off again, none of it makes sense. And they know that it doesn't. They're frustrated. I mean, as bondsmen, we have to call and say, hey, you know, this guy's in, it's aggravated assault, are you keeping him, right? They have to check. I mean, the decision, it changes like the wind blows. And so there is some frustration on our part, because I understand that everybody is very concerned. It seems like this whole program is making sure that the defendant's rights aren't violated. But what happens when they get out and commit more crimes? It happens all the time.
And that's, you know, and I think the question that he asked me earlier is, what is the purpose? Why are you doing this? What is the point? What are you focused on? And I think that we're really focused on, you know, of course there's a component that the defendant's, you know, rights, their due process rights, and all of those things need to be protected, equal protection. We're talking about all of those things. But on the other hand, you're talking about the safety of the community. And so when we have a study that's been validated to prove, you know, they say validated to prove the effectiveness of someone's risk for failure to appear and a risk for recidivism and a risk for committing a new violent offense, I think that's what we're hoping. We're hoping to set conditions that are directly related to what their risk level is. So if they're at a high risk for failure to appear but not to recidivate, we want to make sure that the conditions, if we're going to release them, that we have court notices and reminders, which I can talk to you about that. We have an update. Some other things like that are in place to make sure they're not failing to appear, but not focused really on their recidivism, because they're not going to, and vice versa. So we are focusing on community safety in this study, we hope. And so, right. And I think that's what I'm saying. I don't think that all of this, we're going, oh, this is the fix to everything, and everything's going to be perfect. I mean, we will be doing quality checks, and we're trying to do that, and we do want your feedback. And I, you know, I just moved here from Missouri in May, so I don't know what's been happening. I mean, I've been told here and there, but I haven't been here for years like you guys to know what the relationships have been like. Mm-hmm. So I can't answer that question for you. I can only
Move forward. Another concern, too, is that we're talking about this going in statewide.
Sure.
We have such a diverse state that county to county, there's some big differences.
We agree.
And I don't understand how that is going to work. And then another question is, I know that there's concerns if we'll have access to some of the data, but will we have access to that tool, or at least a report for that tool? Because now we can sign on, like in Salt Lake, to OMS from our offices and kind of see what is going on.
You can see
and
the story.
So we can understand kind of where we're at on things.
Sure.
Because there's, you know, we don't want to waste their time. I certainly don't want to waste my time, but you know, how involved would we even be in this process? So
well, in Utah, we're a right to bail state.
Uh-huh.
Right, we're a right to bail state. So, and right now we have the uniform bond and bail schedule, and that's what we're used. And the judges can make recommendations or release decisions without using monetary bail, but as long as they provide a right to bail, which is release. So they can do that. However, if they want to hold or detain someone, the only thing that they have right now to hold, because we're a right to bail state, is monetary. voluntary. They can just set a really, really high bail and hope they can't make it, right?
Or a bondsman can revoke a bond, and then other smart bondsmen won't get somebody out.
Right. So that's, you know, that's really the option right now if they're wanting to detain someone. So in those instances, when they make a decision about, I want to detain someone because their risk of committing a new offense or risk of committing a new violent offense is really high, I don't see why you guys wouldn't get a copy of whoever does the bond or all of that stuff, wouldn't get a copy of that. And like I said, I did not practice criminal law, I just want you guys to know that, so I'm learning as I go on that piece, so I apologize.
I'm a little surprised that you say that.
I did not. Yes, so give me some leeway, I'm learning. I apologize. But so those things, you know, are working. We're working through the process. I don't see why we wouldn't. I mean, we're going to make it available to defense and prosecution.
Well, I mean, because essentially it's pretty much what we can do in our head in 10 seconds.
It's just, it's a criminal history that it's pulled on their criminal history. So
see,
criminal history is static data.
You do it for free, and it doesn't cost the taxpayer any money.
Well, this is not an ongoing expense. This is, once we have, we don't have to pay for the tool itself, and once we have it, we don't, there's no ongoing cost.
There is
an ongoing cost for programs.
There isn't, because what happens if they don't show up for court, then there is a cost to the taxpayer. Somebody has to go get them and throw them back in jail. Then they're back in jail where they're not going to get out because they've already proven they failed the system. And so then they're going to come down in your matrix.
And then they're higher risk to us because they already failed pre-trial. I mean, if you guys don't want them, maybe we don't want them. I don't know. You know?
Wayne, did you have a question?
I don't know if you have or have not in the committee studied this or not, but the justice system should study the fundamental value of our enforceable conduct, the real value it has, and what it does for the bail bond industry, what it has done for the whole justice system as far as getting people out of jail and back into the system. That's not looked at that I've seen anyway. It needs to be looked at.
Are you guys looking at any of that?
We already know what it is.
We've got our stats
from the
state.
You have the statistics for that?
We have them from the state. Wayne, do you want to?
We've got 2014 and 2015 figures, not 2016 yet, but our forfeiture rate for 2014 was 0.0038%, and our forfeiture rate for 2015 was 0.0028%. I mean, and the latest study that you made for pre-trial release in Salt Lake, of course, that's different than what you're looking at, is 46% failure to appear rate, and that included bail bonds.
That's why those numbers are hidden, in my opinion.
And that included the bail bonds. So if you take ours at just about 100, and then you take pretrial, that puts pretrial somewhere down around the 20-25%.
Sure.
And beyond that, and then the cost of failure to appears are borne by the bail bond. The cost of your program failure to appears are going to be borne by the general public. And has that been studied? Have we looked at that?
I think we're looking forward to that legislative audit and the numbers that come out of that, because I think that's going to, I think that they covered, it's my understanding, that they covered many of the things that you're talking about. And so I'll be interested to see what comes out of that, and if they miss something, maybe that's a hole that we need to look at.
Certainly it is, because I think sometimes a lot of these people doing these studies don't even understand what they're looking for. For example, we talked about in Weber County, when someone fails to appear, they set a forfeiture, you know, date, which is a week later. It's the same thing, but it's 2 days.
Sure.
So in the statistics that they're getting, are they counting those two for each individual? Because that's just their standard practice, and that would make it double. So, I mean, there are some things that happen that we understand, because I don't expect a court clerk in Salt Lake County to know what they're doing in Beaver. But the funny thing is, we know, because we're dealing with all the different counties.
And I think that's part of, I don't know how the legislative auditors look, you know, if they notice those differences or whatever. So you guys will have to do a good scrub on that data when it comes out.
But it's hard. I'm hoping that we can prevent some of that before it happens.
Sure.
Because it's hard to change statistics and data once it's presented.
Well, it seems like you guys are implementing all this without all of these facts and everything found out.
Well, we're not implementing this today. We're trying to get an MOU signed so that we can get access.
What is an MOU?
A memorandum of understanding.
Okay.
And so it's sort of like a contract. Right. So as I was trying to explain, we're still working through that process.
Uh-huh.
And so once we get through that process, which I'm hoping by the end of the month we can kind of get through that, then we talk to their contractors who actually come out and implement, help us with implementation. But that doesn't mean the day that they walk on site, we implement the tool and that's it. No, we have a lot of work to do before implementation even happens, because we need to figure out all of those things. We need to figure out what's happening in every single court and how can we make this work for each individual court based on the resources and the process that they have. Can we make processes consistent? And if we can't, how can we make it as consistent as possible? What resources do they have? You know, so rural districts are not going to have funding or the need for a robust pretrial services program.
Well,
just
if
not.
You find out that it's not feasible and the numbers don't add up, or are you just going to walk away?
No. See, that was part of what Arnold came to do the on-site assessment, to take
Arnold.
A look at that information and
to
see if we had the ability, the data capability, if we had the infrastructure, if we had the ability to put all this in place. And they came back and said they think we do. Now, if we go through all of this and they say, you aren't ready, you don't have it together the way you need to get it together, then they aren't going to allow us to use the tool. That's built into the MOU. So I think that's answering your question a little bit. But there's a lot of work. There's probably a solid 6 months worth of work that we have to do before we even be, once we get through the MOU and they come on site, we have probably a solid 6 months worth of work before the tool would even be implemented. So there's a lot of work that needs to happen before we're not just throwing it into place and hoping for success.
Another problem that concerns me is, aside from being in the Belmont industry, as being a resident of Utah,
sure,
who pays taxes and is a homeowner and have kids, you know, I have kids, I'm a mom. The thing that concerns me is we have cities like Ogden that their police force, I mean, they are in trouble right now. Their budgets are terrible. They've had lots of their older guys that are getting retire, leave, go to other counties. I mean, they are so completely overwhelmed. It's on the news. They don't know what to do. The media's been involved. And so to implement a program where they're just going to start cutting people, I mean, when we get a failure to appear as a Belmont company, it's a bad day. I mean, we take that pretty serious. You know, we are on it. We have bail enforcement. I mean, and again, it costs the public nothing. The police officers don't have to, you know, we handle our own stuff. And we do hundreds of arrests a year. And unfortunately, some of the data on that, again, that's why these statistics and data drive me crazy, get a little bit screwed up, because in Utah County, when we apprehend someone and take them to the jail, we go in the front door, a deputy comes out, meets us in the lobby, takes them. So we're never on record anywhere that bail enforcement, you know, was the one bringing the person in. If we happen to arrest somebody, and this might be surprising, but they lie and they cheat and they steal, and a lot of times they have maybe drugs on them. So if that were to happen, which happens quite often, we do have to notify the police. They have to come. We can only apprehend that person and revoke their bond and serve that warrant for the case that we're on. So if they get new charges, of course, that officer has to be involved with the booking process. And a lot of times we'll go to the jail with them, make sure that we revoke the bond and that part's taken care of.
Sure.
But that is super frustrating, because we talk about data and statistics, I mean, and it's not valid. And unless we can explain that to the right people, nobody would ever even know. I mean, I think that's the other frustrating part, is just as a resident of Utah, it concerns me. I mean, are my taxes going to go up? Because, and the rate of warrants that are issued even now is so overwhelming to the sheriff's department, I can't even imagine how it's going to be with this deal where there's nobody else is held accountable.
Sure. Dion, just so you know, there's 197,467 warrants on statewide warrants
right now.
It doesn't even surprise me.
And I know that they've been talking a lot about, you know, trying to move more towards citation and release. They've talked about moving more towards summons versus warrant and those sorts of things. I'm not sure. I know that's all stuff that we're going to have to talk about in the working group. I'm not sure what's been done up to date on that yet. And so just so everyone understands, I staff the committee, so I do a lot of the grunt work and organization. But the chair of the committee is Judge Paige Peterson. Okay, so they're making, the committee makes those decisions, judicial council makes those decisions, state court administrator makes those decisions, not
me. Did you say that Sheriff Winder is on your board?
Sheriff Winder, that's correct. He's on the committee.
So I think you guys ought to put like a, maybe one of his jailers or one of the regular police officers.
Or a different, a sheriff that, a different no deputy that doesn't have a policy of no misdemeanors are going to be booked in my facility. Yeah.
Maybe
I've got a video here where they turn away a heroin addict on the street and give her a citation.
And I got one other question for you. Did you say he was from Missouri?
Yeah.
Did Governor Boggs send you?
Okay, real quick, and Keisha, I want to just say, you're coming to the lion's den. That's pretty tough.
That's fine. I've got thick skin, so it's
so
fine.
That's like us going to your committee, you know, it just doesn't happen. There's some things I want to say. One thing Keisha said that I want to point out, and Keisha, this is nothing against you. She said, this is going to be enacted without the legislature. So I hope everybody here heard that. Number two is I want to point out a couple of things about the Arnold Foundation, and you guys can go on arnoldfoundation.org or .com, whichever it is, I can't remember. But go on to the Arnold Foundation. This is the farthest left-wing organization that there is. They have not donated to any right-wing organization. You will see Planned Parenthood, you'll see the committee to elect Barack Obama, you'll see the committee to elect Hillary Clinton, you'll see all these left-wing organizations that are donating money to Utah for a year. Okay, this is what we've been told by this other person that knows, and I know he knows, that after the $2 million comes in or whatever it is, then the states are gonna be doing this budgeting themselves. But I encourage everybody in this room that's related to bail bonds to go do your own research on the Arnold Foundation. The money came from Enron, and his wife, Mrs. Arnold, I don't even know what her name is, was an attorney, and she was so upset all the time that when her clients would come that the bail bonds had taken the money so the attorney couldn't get the money. These are all things that you can research on your own, and you can and just do your own research. But I encourage you to get a hold of your legislators after you've done your own research on the Arnold Foundation and seen the left-wing causes that they donate to. I did not personally find one cause towards the right that they have been to. This state is one of the most conservative states in the Union. The country kind of made a sharp right turn with this election, and Utah is making a left turn. And I just think that our legislators need to know, and I encourage you all to get involved.
Can I ask about the $2 million you're talking about? Because
we've been told that was a grant.
For this
one? From the Arnold Foundation.
No. What we're doing is we got money from CCJJ. It's going to cost for the contractors to help us come and do the working group bit work to get this.
CCJJ did about $200,000 or something like that, right?
It's $170,000 is what it's going to cost. Yeah, but there's no... After that, that's it. That's one time, and there's no ongoing cost associated with this tool.
But the Arnold Foundation is donating the money to do this implementation.
No. That's incorrect. The $170,000?
No, I know that came from, that was
set aside. That came from CCJJ. That is going to the contractors for the Arnold Foundation to do our implementation. The tool itself does not cost any money. And so we are paying for the implementation, the $170,000 one time, and then that's it. There are no additional costs, no additional money is coming to us, nothing like that.
Okay, so take the money out of it. You still have the influence of the Arnold Foundation. And then one other thing I wanted to say, you guys, look when you're looking at our Arnold Foundation, look what they've done to the state of Colorado. It's there. It's a simple Google. Look what the influence they've peddled in the state of Colorado. I still encourage you, whether there's no money or whatever, this is a left-wing organization. This is an attempted takeover of private industry by a government entity who's doing it without legislation. So that's...
What is the Arnold Foundation's involvement with you? Like, what, you have none at all? Because you kept saying their names, so where do they come into play?
Well, they validated, they created and validated the tool that we're using, and they're providing it to us at no cost.
That's where the whole idea came from.
I see. For the tool, yes. And then they have a contract company, the one that we're paying $170, to come and help us implement it, and then all of that goes away.
I've got a question. Was there an RFP sent out, or how did you decide to use?
We still have to work through that process. Yeah. So I haven't been through a funding budgeting session yet, so that's going to be made above me as well.
It just seems funny that they've already decided who they're going to use and the influence.
Well, the problem is
here.
That this is the only static tool that's available. And so in the contractors that they use are the only ones they authorize, and so there's no other vendor that has this static based tool. So there really isn't another entity that we could use.
Is the Arnold Foundation funding the Harvard study?
As far as I know, yes.
They're paying for the study of their own program.
Of their, to
right.
Make sure that it
we
works.
Aren't studying that. We aren't paying for that study. No, exactly. They are paying for that study.
Wait. Keisha,
yes.
If you can answer this question.
Sure.
Walk me through an arrest and using the Arnold Foundation's risk assessment. What I'm looking at is whether the bail be established.
Right. Well, I guess it would depend on the offense and all that stuff. So if a probable cause determination has to be made, the judge will do that. We're hoping to combine the probable cause and initial release decision at the same time. Right? But like I said, that's happening differently throughout the state. And I don't know if they've got the resources to do that, the judge schedule, all of that stuff. So all that has to be decided. So I don't really know. I know we have to make an initial release decision within 24 hours. Whether we extend the bail sureties or the, what are they called? The jail folks to do the initial release decision based on the matrix and the tool itself, or if the judge will do it on probable cause and initial appearance and just kind of do it at that point. I don't know because we haven't gotten to that point yet.
What is the model though?
What do you mean?
There's a process you're looking to accomplish. What would that be? Is it going to be at booking, or is it going to be in the courtroom, or where's the matrix going to come into play?
The risk assessment tool in the matrix will be run and populated and scored immediately upon booking. For every defendant who's booked into jail, one of these tools will be processed, and it will be available for review by the judge, the defense attorney, and the prosecutor. When they make that an initial release decision, it has to be made within 24 hours of arrest. So how that's accomplished, whether it's done via video conference with the jail or if they bring them into court within 24 hours, I'm not sure how that process is going to work because that's been done differently and I don't know what the resources are, so that has to be thought out.
So for example, right now someone gets arrested and they're able to post bail, they can post bail and get out of jail. This is saying, no, you've got to wait for a judge's decision?
Maybe, yes.
You said within the 24 hours. So how is it that because you said everything has to be confirmed, like phone numbers or how who's going to be doing that confirmation? Like the jailers that are going to be making these calls?
What calls?
To verify the information. You said that had to be verified.
They're not doing
it's automated.
Yeah.
It's an automated tool. It's based on their criminal history. There's no interview with the defendant.
Okay, so how do you know? I mean, like the address and all the information that
all
the defendant
that doesn't
is
matter.
That all goes. I'm assuming that's obtained upon booking through the jail system. So whatever's populated on booking into the system.
None of her questions on the matrix even addressed any of that personal stuff. That's why he said you could jump off a bus
right. And
they wouldn't know.
Yeah.
So
they're going to lie and then go to your
of course. Well, their criminal history will be pulled out of the database of the PCI.
And just in case they're new liars.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yes. Yeah, but they might be new liars.
Is there any other questions?
Mr. Chair, I had just one comment. May I borrow the matrix?
Sure.
I want to allay some of the concerns. It's my understanding that when you're looking at this matrix, that there is a place for commercial bail in here. You know, I can't predict the future, but, you know, one of
very
the...
Very high risk? Where would it be?
Yeah, well, depending on risk, depending on the failure to appear... You know, some people, like now, are released on their own recognizance, and that's why I think I heard Keisha say that there's not a requirement that legislation be enacted to implement this, because it's not really that different.
Our Constitution has a right to bail, yeah.
Yeah, the, under our constitution, there's a right to bail. So, so somewhere in this matrix, the judges may have what I would think would have.
Most likely, like I explained earlier, if they want to detain, most likely, if they're falling down here, or I think there's a list of 4 or 5 offenses that you can hold them without bail. So if it's any one of those, or if you end up down here and they want to hold them, they're probably going to have to set a fairly high bail.
But there is a legal justification that the judge can make a determination that they're not eligible for bail.
Well, they can do that
hold
now.
Them.
Right.
Yeah, now.
They can do that right now. They can do pretrial right now. They can do whatever
sure.
right now.
Sure.
Wait.
Keith, I don't remember the gentleman's name, that's the contractor, but I asked him the question that some of the goals that you're trying to achieve, maybe the bail bond system would be a benefit to achieve those. And his answer back is that the Arnold Foundation is advocating no monetary release whatsoever, except those charges that make the hair stand up on the back of your neck. He said it right there in that meeting.
Okay. I'm trying to remember the question you asked and his response. So I think, are you asking me if the goal is to eventually eliminate monetary bail? Is that the question you asked him?
No. The question I asked is that what I would imagine to reach your goals that the bail industry process, affordable bail could be a great advantage to get there quicker. And he said, no, we're not. We're basically suggesting no monetary release whatsoever, except those charges that make the hair stand up on the back of your neck.
Okay, so I think what he was talking about was in the Utah context. So what they're, like I said, what they're recommending is that the releases here and here would be with pretrial supervision and not a monetary amount in these boxes. And the only place where there might be a monetary amount, like I just talked about, is if you're wanting to hold them. So yes, I think that's what he said.
Are any of those conditions going to be monitoring and things like that?
That's part of what the working group has to sit down and figure out. What are the resources? What's available?
Cost,
what's not available?
So you've seen more money than bail.
The billboards on I-15 says don't drink and drive. So the new billboards DOJ is going to put up is drink and drive. We won't throw you in jail.
I guess does Arnold know this? Because Arnold, we need to send Arnold a text. Because here's what's happening. People are getting released on pretrial now. And I mean, this is a fact.
In Salt Lake County.
They're getting released on pretrial now.
I should have brought Pat Kimball with me.
They're failing to appear. They're committing new crimes.
Okay.
If Arnold is so concerned about people staying in jail because they can't afford it, well, what happens when they screw up their pretrial or they commit a new crime is they go back in and then they don't qualify for bail or for pretrial, but it doesn't matter. Because they're either on a no bail hold, they are on a cash only. I mean, if Arnold's so concerned about people paying to get out of bail, pretrial is the last thing he should be doing.
I just think I can't talk to what Arnold thinks or doesn't think. I think there's just, at some point, we're just going to have to agree to disagree. I think that, and hopefully the numbers will show either it's working or it's not, and if it's not, we can try to find a way to fix it. I think it's important to, you know, as I'm hearing you guys talk, it sounds like you're doing a lot of the same things.
We are
that pretrial. Yeah, that pretrial.
No cost.
Until they go to trial. We are essentially babysitting them until they go to trial. We are pretrial.
And if they don't show up for court, we bring them back.
And it doesn't cost anybody anything.
I would be interested to see when the legislative audit comes back, if the numbers, like you're bringing them back, those numbers, and then forfeiting bail and all of that stuff, how those numbers compare to the failure to appear rate.
I'll share some information from one agency in the state of Utah.
Okay.
Every contract that we had signed this year, the risk assessment on that contract says that these people are going to appear. 100% they'll appear.
What risk assessment?
The risk assessment we go through to
that we thought they weren't going to go to.
Plus, we have the contract, the enforceable contract, where we involve other people. Okay.
Okay.
All of those people were going to appear, and this one agency had almost 300 failure to appear this year, of which we produced almost every one of them in the court at no cost to the taxpayer. What's the new program going to do to that? I mean, that's a good question to ask.
It is a good question. When you have a committee, you you need to bring that stuff
well,
up.
Well, okay.
You bring that stuff up. Make sure we're not missing something.
Speaking of the committee, I wonder if it would be helpful to understand the committee is now being broken into a couple of subgroups.
Yeah,
maybe if you could talk about that for a minute, because I see in the subgroup that I'm on and the Waynes are. I also see Brad is on there and Roger Hayes with Aladdin. So there is some.
Yeah, there is. So the main committee is broken up into three subcommittees. A data collection subcommittee to kind of research that issue. A legal processes subcommittee and. And then also a risk assessment tool and monitoring program subcommittee. So I can tell you who's on your, I don't think you guys have anyone on data collection. Sheriff Winder's on data collection, but let's see. So Brett, you're on legal and processes. Wayne Carlos is on legal and processes. Roger Hayes from Aladdin Bail Bond is on legal and processes. Brad Jenkins is on legal.
But we haven't had one.
No, not yet. Yeah, not yet. I'm sending you a doodle for that. I just finally got, I think I sent you a doodle invite. Did you get that?
Yeah.
To pick your dates? Yeah,
but
I just have
done that over and over.
No, we did it once in October because I jumped the gun.
Okay.
We weren't ready yet.
We did
yeah.
it. I put in all those
you
dates
did.
Over and over.
In October.
You got some static back from the judges on that.
I know. Judges always get on to me about my doodle invites. But yeah, I did that in October because I thought we were ready to go, but they said, no, you jumped the gun. We're not ready yet. And so that's why I just redid it. So you will be hearing from me, but I just had an employee quit, so I'm having to do her job and mine, so how that goes. Let's see, so then we have.
And they'll be meeting in February, if you're looking at?
On subcommittees? Mm-hmm. Yeah, the committee meets every other month, and so we're hoping the subcommittees can meet in the off month to kind of get started. And really what I'm gonna have the subcommittees, subcommittee chairs will determine the direction of the subcommittee's work, but what we're hoping is that we can start doing some initial research into some of these issues that you guys are bringing up and that we need to fix and that we need to look into in those specific areas and try to do some research into what's happening now, is it working, why is it not working, why, what's wrong, how, you know, what do we need to do to move forward. And so we're trying to do some of that preliminary work before the Arnold folks come and we have to start working through the working group piece.
When I asked, in terms of just the legal processes subcommittee,
mm-hmm.
What our next steps are,
mm-hmm.
You were there, obviously, Keith, but I was told that really we're in a holding pattern until that audit comes out, because based on that audit, that may provide direction for what
we're hoping
we need to do or don't
yeah.
need to do. And I understand from the court administrator that they responded to the audit and the auditors. Take those responses and maybe edit it or maybe not, but that it is in final form. They're just waiting for the legislators who are on the audit committee to release the report to be public.
As far as I know, the higher ups at AOC have given their input, and then that's sort of back at the legislature, and they're doing whatever it is that they do, and it's supposed to be published soon, but I'm not involved in that process. So
I believe that comes out the 26th of this month. So, we've got to
do. So you know more than I do on that. Above my pay grade. So.
Is there any questions? Any more questions? Or
just really, already, and you may not be able to answer this, I'm not sure.
Sure.
As Wayne indicated, the charges that are going to be held with no bail, do we know what those are?
Well, there are
only. Or the potential to be held.
You said there were five.
There are only four or five in the statute and the Constitution right now.
Okay, so.
So those are in the Constitution and the statute right now. It lists out the four or five. Charges where you can hold without bail. Other than that, it's a right to bail state.
Okay, so hypothetically speaking, once again, just to get my head around this. So,
sure.
Once this, when this is implemented, someone gets booked and they do this PSA on everybody that's going to get arrested, hopefully statewide.
Yes.
Then this information goes to somebody that's going to make a decision.
The judge, hopefully.
Okay.
Hopefully.
Or a jailer. Okay.
Yeah.
So. At that point in time, is there, let's say that they're held, quote unquote, is there going to be a bail set on a charge outside of those five that we just discussed?
Right, there would have to be because it's a right to bail state.
Okay.
So what we're saying is if the judge decides, I don't want to release this guy because it's an offense that makes hair on the back of my neck stand up, but it's not one of the five, I don't want him out on the streets, then he's going to say, I want to detain, but the only way he can detain them right now is by setting a monetary bail because we're at a right to bail state. Does that make sense?
It does. Now, one other question.
Sorry, but so it's going to be like pretrial Salt Lake is now, though, they're going to have a bail amount, but they could still be released on pretrial, or are you saying if they're released on pretrial, there will never even be a bail set? Isn't that what you're asking?
Well, sometimes there isn't, right?
Yeah.
It's a no bail, it's they're going to be
felony. And they still get left, yeah.
Right, that's yes. So the hope with the matrix is that the decisions on the green and yellows, they can be released OR with some conditions. Pretrial supervision.
Now, would bail be one of those conditions?
Maybe they could be.
Okay.
It could be, yes. But the judge makes that determination, yes.
So the judge would say, listen.
The judge can completely ignore this and do whatever he wants.
Right, exactly. And sometimes they say, I want pretrial and bail, which is kind of complicated. But,
sure.
He could look at, the judge could look at the assessment and say, so what?
Yeah, that's right. He could look at it and say, yeah, that sounds all fine and good, and the nurse might be right, but my 40 years on the bench and my knowledge of this defendant, I'm not letting
What if the defendant says, because y'all might not believe this, but it happens. What if the defendant says, I've got to be to a meeting in Chicago next week. I can't jump through three trials. Crap they want me to do, I want to bail. I don't want to be released on pretrial.
Judge's discretion.
It happens all the time.
Judge's discretion.
Judge's discretion? We can't call pretrial and say, hey, this guy's going to bail out. A defendant himself can't decline.
It's a trial.
Because we're so worried about their rights.
It depends on how the system is set up, how the judge delegates the decision authority, and at what level of offense.
Yeah. Well, we
right?
need to be involved in that because that's something that nobody else would understand and or believe,
sure.
But it happens.
Sure. Yeah, and all of that is we're going to need to talk through that.
So, need to talk to?
Me. Send your stuff to me.
Okay.
Try to funnel it to the right place.
Do you text? Because I'm getting pretty good
at that. Gosh.
We've got
please don't text me. Please just email me.
If we can, let's wrap it up. Is there anything on new business or other business?
I got another business.
I have another business as well.
Brad and I, our last term is going to be, our last meeting is next April, so you guys should start looking for replacements. Just as a heads up, because we only have one more meeting. Our term expires the 30th of June, so we won't be here for the July meeting.
Excellent point. So, is that something we want to discuss right now, Commissioner? Or we could do that, I suppose, at the next meeting. What we've done in the past is anybody that is interested in serving on the bail bond board by a resume or a CV to Steve, and then he holds those, and then we'll review those with the commissioner. Per the code, it's the commissioner that appoints the bail bond board.
So make sure Perry's got
her
next meeting so she can call Grady Leaming.
My last thing is that it's not on the agenda, but the legislature is starting, when is it, Commissioner, week after next?
Week after Martin Luther King, so I think that's 23rd.
And we're all very excited for that legislature to come back. The commissioner has a bill. It's HB 42. There is absolutely nothing in HB 42 that touches on bail. I do note that Senator Adams has a bill file open that's labeled bail bonds, but there's nothing in it. And then I also understand that Senator Hilliard has a bill file opened for bail if the pretrial release committee may need some sort of legislative change.
Senator Thatcher also has one open for pretrial.
Okay, I wasn't aware of that.
Right, and Hilliard has nothing on pretrial or nothing on bail bonds at all. He's got one in there that talks about judicial amendments, and I don't know what that means. That could mean anything.
It's pretty open.
Nobody on the outside says anything.
The bottom line is the department is unaware of any actual bill language addressing bail at this point. And if we do become aware of a bail bond bill,
Steve will post it on the department's website. We track all the insurance-related bills, or at least list them on there so you can be aware of those.
Suzette just mentioned that Thatcher is going to be speaking in Tooele tomorrow night on this pretrial issue. Is that correct?
On several issues, but pretrial is on the list.
Where is he going to be speaking in Tooele?
I didn't bring I'll have to get back to you.
Can't be too many places.
I just got the email, so I...
One final thing. Yeah, you had offered to share with the bail bond board the
matrix.
The documented matrix.
Yeah, I have to get permission from Arnold to do that because that's proprietary.
Okay.
And we haven't signed our MOU yet. So let me send him an email, see if we can do that. And if I can, I'm happy to, but I'll let you know either way.
Okay, and then if, as you do that, I what we typically would do is not only give it to the bail bond board, but also to the 37 licensed bail agencies in Utah.
Yes.
So, as you're asking, it's
sure.
Kind of
I'll let them know what the plan is. But yeah,
make it public.
It's like I said, it's proprietary, so I'll ask permission, and hopefully, I can get it released. But it's like I said, it's not my decision.
I appreciate the phone.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll let you know.
Motion to adjourn.
Second. All in favor? See you guys next week or next month.
Thanks for having me.
April.
Next quarter.